ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, it's Spectacular Show! This week, comedian and filmmaker Ray Harrington talks about Back to the Future! And our throwaway guest that nobody cares about, the world's most successful temp worker, Jeremy Oceans! And your host, John O'Connor!
Thank you! Thank you! Thank you very much! Too kind! Too kind! Welcome to Spectacular Show, everybody! Beautiful weather this week, yeah? But today, the weather station said tomorrow's forecast calls for rain. I know. I said, rain? More like pain. Right? Right? Ba-boom. I know. Rain. Pain. Rhyming pays my mortgage. How about our sports team? Huh? Killing it this year. And everyone in town hopping on the bandwagon. But I'm not going to. I'm not going to. I'm going to be the person pulling that bandwagon. Right? Oh, my back! And analysts say that this year, they could be crowned world champs. And it's a big step up from the last few years when they were chumps. I am very good at this. Bing! Bang! Boom! Zap. Okay, please be seated. Please sit back down. News in Washington, the politicians are at it again. Apparently, while we were hoping they'd get things done, they decided to fight forever. Okay, oh, please put me down. Put me down, sir. Please put me back down. Thank you. There will be time for carrying me on your shoulders after the show. Carry me on your shoulders after the show. And speaking of the show, we have a great show for you tonight. I'm very excited. Our first guest is a comedian that has two albums on Stand Up Records, as well as an award-winning documentary called Be a Man. He's here with us here tonight to talk about his favorite movie, Back to the Future. Ray Harrington is here. And our throwaway guest that nobody cares about, the world's longest tenured temporary worker, Jeremy Oceans is here. Folks, while I parkour all the way over to the desk, please take this opportunity and listen to our friend SynthBot. Rate this show, like this show, and click that subscribe button. It'll really help us out. Take it away, SynthBot! Subscribe. Spectacular Show is brought to you by... Do you like lobster rolls?
Yeah.
Do you like roller skates and skateboards?
Yeah.
Do you wish you could have them together?
Oh, yeah!
Then look no further.
Come on down to Lenny's Lobster Roll, the only seafood restaurant skate park in the world. We've got lots of lobster meat stuffed into a golden brown buttered bun.
Mmm.
I suggest you gulp down about 6 or 7 and then take a few laps around the rink. Nothing like being on skates with a stomach of buttered seafood. Want to hit the half pipe on your skateboard? Well, take some clam chowder in a to-go cup. Don't forget your straw. And every chowder comes with bottomless oyster crackers. Or, if you'd prefer, we've got tender, flaky white cod. Don't get any on your rollerblades. Lenny's Lobster Roll Seafood Restaurant and Skate Park, 123 Boston Harbor Road, Portland, Maine. Heavy seafood on wheels. We ain't that far from the beach.
My first guest is a comedian who has 2 comedy albums available on Stand Up Records, and his award-winning documentary, Be a Man, is available now on iTunes, Amazon, Vudu, and other outlets. Ladies and gentlemen, Spectacular Show is thrilled to present Mr. Ray Harrington. Here, buddy.
Oh, I stepped on your toes when you said thank you. Thank you. Very glad to be here. Honored. Blessed. All the hashtags to
all
be
of them.
Here. But no, really, I do appreciate it. And I'm excited to talk to you with microphones in between us.
Me too. It's great to have you here. Fantastic comedian. Anybody that's in, you're usually in New England. Sometimes you'll make your way out to, I've seen you in Minneapolis or down in
you
Florida.
You were there?
Yeah.
Oh, I haven't done Florida yet. No, Texas.
I've done quite
a bit of Texas, yeah.
I've seen you there.
Florida, not yet. Came close this summer, and then I went, no. I'm not going to Florida in the summer.
Yeah.
That's gross.
Well, thank you very much again for being here. Today, this being the very first episode, I was hoping that as our discussion topic, we would have something that was not obscure. I really wanted something for the first episode of the show to be something classic.
Right, yes.
And you just said flat out, well, I could always do Back to the Future.
Yeah,
and I said, yes, thank you so much. That is perfect.
Yeah.
I was so thrilled that you agreed to do Back to the Future. It is, if I'm not mistaken, your favorite film of all time?
Yeah, it definitely is. When we were going back and forth, like I was texting you, you know, a list of things like, okay, we could talk about this. These are things I like. And Back to the Future was so obvious because it's just a part of me that I was like, oh, yeah, that. I forgot. Like it's like saying, oh, we could talk about my left arm. You know, it's a part of my personality now, I think, because of the involvement in Be a Man. Mm-hmm. The documentary had a bunch of Back to the Future stuff in it. But yeah, it is something that it's tough. It like, yes, I love it. Mm-hmm. But it just, sometimes it doesn't even register as something like, yes, I love that thing because I've loved it for so long. You know what I mean?
It's like ingrained in you.
Yeah. Yeah.
So in case you have never seen Back to the Future, Back to the Future was released in 1985, directed by Robert Zemeckis and written by both Robert Zemeckis and Bob Gale, starring Michael J. Fox, Christopher Lloyd, Leah Thompson, Crispin Glover, and Tom Wilson. Now, Tom Wilson is a stand-up comedian.
Yeah, yeah.
Who also had this role in Back to the Future and was in Be a Man.
Yeah,
he agreed
to
be in the movie with you, and you've opened for him before.
Right, yeah.
Yeah.
Which was insane. So Tom Wilson, you know, he tours, I don't know how frequently, you know,
and he's super
funny. He's very funny, and he's a very genuine, smart person. But I've always liked him. I think it's funny. He plays Biff Tannen, the bully of the film, right? Mm-hmm. The villain of the piece. And he kind of got cornered into that. You know what I mean? He was typecast as that guy. And it took forever for him to kind of worm out of that a little bit. And he played the gym teacher in Freaks and Geeks and had a really soft side to the character. And there's so much heart in him, and it's really wonderful. So I'm I feel very lucky because Back to the Future is very important to me. Mm-hmm. It's one of my absolute favorite things. Mm-hmm. I love the world of Back to the Future. I like the rules that are set there for time travel. I'm a big time travel nerd. I like all of the little things, the trappings of it, the hovercraft hoverboard, stuff like that. So to now be able to say like, oh, I've got these loose connections to the movie is bizarre to me.
So fill me in here a little bit. Back to the Future, you first saw, obviously, when you were a kid.
Yes.
In the movie theater.
No.
Okay.
No. I saw Back to the Future on, VHS.
Okay, yeah.
Because I was too young. I was born in 83.
Gotcha.
So I was two when it came out. And then I saw it probably too young, like any 80s kid.
Sure.
We got to see things a little earlier than we probably should have. Mm-hmm. I think Back to the Future 2 is the one that I was really more aware of.
Yes.
And then I do remember distinctly we were going to go see Back to the Future 3 in the movie theater. That was the one I was going to get to see in the theater. Like, I was old enough to say, I want to go see that movie. But we went to the theater, and I was so ready to watch the movie, and they sold us tickets, and we walked in, and we were a little bit late, so the movie started, and I'm like, oh God, and we walk in, and there's no seats, as we keep walking down, and then we're in the front row, and it's like, oh man, the front row at the movie theater, this sucks. I was so young, but I knew, I'm like, I don't want to watch a movie this way.
Right.
We get to the front row, no seats. It was sold out, and they had sold us tickets. We had to walk out of there.
That was such a letdown.
So disappointing. There's been some. I have some history with like real letdown with Back to the Future.
Sure.
That's one of them for sure.
So you first saw Back to the Future, the original one, on VHS.
Yes.
Did you own it or did you rent it?
Rented it.
Rented it at the movie store.
Yes.
Was it something that you like picked out, or was it? You went in with someone and they're like, let's get this.
I don't remember how it happened. Mm-hmm. It must have just been kind of put upon me.
Yes.
I'm sure my mom was just like, oh, yeah, that'll be fun. Michael J. Fox, he's fun. He's in Growing Pains. No, he's not. No, he's not. No, he's in Growing Pains. He's the little one. No, the Growing Pains, Michael J. He was the wolf boy. No, that
his
teen
sister's
wolf.
On Full House.
Oh, well, nope. That you're thinking of a Cameron. Oh, from Ferris Bueller. No. Just stuff like that.
Yep.
But yeah, so I'm sure my mom introduced it to me, and then I was hooked immediately.
Yep. So for this, for this podcast,
yeah.
I went back and rewatched the film, which I had seen before multiple times, not in a long time. And it's one of those things that I don't know if you feel the same way, not necessarily about this movie as much as it is just movies or TV shows or anything in general. There are parts of this that don't necessarily age so well.
No.
Yeah.
No. But you have to – I mean, it's of its time.
Of course.
And even at the time, there are elements of the movie where, there was questions – there were questions, and I am surprised that it got cleared, most of it. You know what I mean?
Because
they did make changes, which is crazy. When you look at what the plot is now, they did make changes to the movie. Like the DeLorean, famously, it was not a car at first. It was going to be a refrigerator. The time machine was supposed to be a refrigerator.
Interesting.
Yeah, and they wrote the whole movie like in the original script. It's a refrigerator that he gets in, and it takes him back in time, And so, like, there's a whole end sequence where they have to put the refrigerator on the back of a truck and take it to another place and do all this stuff.
But, I had no idea about this.
Yeah, so the concern, though, was that kids would then just get inside refrigerators going, I'm in a time machine, and die, you know? And Punky Brewster had to have a whole episode about it.
I remember it very distinctly.
Yeah, you know?
I learned that day about refrigerators and CPR in the same day.
Oh, in the same day.
Yeah,
that's
because
a lot
that's
to
how
take
they
in.
Got. That's how they brought Cherry back.
Right. And, but no, so they changed it because of that. And
that is so funny. I never had heard that before in my life.
Yeah, and originally the ending was a nuclear ending. It wasn't a lightning strike. It's a whole thing. It's a whole fucking to-do.
Yeah.
A lot of the changes that happened. That movie, I'm amazed that the movie came through the way it is and those iconic things are there.
Yes.
Because the things that really carry through from Back to the Future are things that are ubiquitous. They're everywhere. Everybody knows them. Even if you saw Back to the Future once or you never saw it, those things are there. The DeLorean, the hoverboard, the lightning strike, you know, Doc being crazy. It's very 50s, and you have the flux capacitor, right? Like, all of that stuff is, you need that stuff in the movie, right?
Right.
And to think that there are so, like, the DeLorean might be the most iconic movie car because of how different it is, right?
Ever.
Yeah.
Another one.
I mean, there are tons of iconic movie cars, but that, because it's a DeLorean, which doesn't exist anymore,
right?
Because it was a rare car to begin with, and then they altered it. Like, you know, there's other movie, like Christine or, you know, Knight Rider or something like that's a TV car, but whatever.
Sure.
Those are just cars. Like, you can see those on the road sometimes. A DeLorean is like, and anybody that sees a DeLorean immediately goes, Back to the Future, you know? And it could have been a fucking refrigerator.
It sounds so lame in comparison because it's such a cool element in the story.
Right, right.
And the car looked so, I mean, especially as a kid watching that, it just looked so cool. And it had,
yes.
I'll say this, I think the fact that the doors open the way they do only adds to how cool the car is.
100%. Gull wing doors?
Yeah,
absolutely. I mean, that is a key part of it. Can you imagine a DeLorean pulling up and just opening regularly? You'd be like, oh, all right.
Yeah, what is this, a sedan?
What is that, like a... Is that like a Lamborghini you built yourself? You know, it's like it's got no curves. It's all corners on this fucking car. That's like such a cool part of the whole like mythos of it. And then part two comes out, Back to the Future 2, and the fucking thing can fly. You know what I mean? Like that was like I hadn't hit puberty yet, but already I was just like, yup, okay, this is everything I need. You know, because as a kid, what do you do? You play with matchboxes and you know, at the time, micro machines and stuff like that. You know, you drive them on the ground, but all of those cars can fly when you are playing as a little kid. And then Back to the Future 2 comes out, and they're like, dude, we got you. Yeah. You know, we know what you want. You know what I mean? It's like it's like a drug dealer coming up to you going, dude, we got the latest and greatest. You know what I mean? I know you usually come for this, but trust me, you're going to want to mainline this, you know? And that's when Back to the Future 2 is my favorite of the trilogy. Mm-hmm. I love 1 for what it is and what it did in building the world. 2 is so special because you get to revisit that world while also including way more new fun stuff. You know, that's when you get the fucking hoverboard. I don't know. There's so many like
sneakers he had, right?
Oh my God. Yes. The Nikes that like automatically lace up,
which they made real versions of them.
All of those things, the DeLorean, the flying DeLorean, the hoverboard, the shoes, all that stuff. Paired with time travel and this idea of like absolute freedom, and the fact that the movie is so tied to parents and, you know, doing what you're supposed to do, but not doing what you're supposed to do, you know, breaking the rules, going out late, you know, all that shit is in that, it's baked into that movie. It is porn for kids, if that makes sense. I'm trying to say this the right way. Do you know what I'm saying, though?
Yeah,
it's
does.
All childhood fantasy.
Right.
And
right.
It's stuff that you get to experience, like, and just mainline all of it. And that's what, I think that's why it hit so many people the way it did.
I don't disagree. And what really the point about the second one you made about how it revisits everything, but now it's like, you didn't say this, but kind of on steroids, because now you're going in the opposite direction where now all of these things have, the stakes are raised, all of these new technologies and new exciting things, because we grew up around the same time. I don't know if you were ever told these types of things, but I remember being in first grade in Boston and my teacher, Sister Barbara, telling us, like, oh, by the time you guys can drive, the cars will be flying.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And thinking, like, wow, like, this is going to be this jetpack future, which, of course, never came to. But the hoverboard especially, the idea of being a heavyset kid on a skateboard.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then not having to worry about the wheels catching on anything. Like, you could just float down the street fast.
Yeah, man.
That was the ultimate in fantasy for me.
Yeah. Oh, it the hoverboard. I mean, these things are so iconic. Like, we're not even talking about plot. We're just talking about props.
Mm-hmm.
And like, that world is so fun. And then I don't think any kid could not imagine going back in time, going forward in time, like being able to move around. And that created a very real, like, nerdy love for time travel. For me, I like that idea. I like the concept of it. And you can go down a rabbit hole with it. And it's so fucked up to think that this is a movie that, you know, at its core is about a kid going back in time and accidentally making his mother horny for him.
Yeah.
It's most of the movie. You know what I mean? It starts immediately when he meets her.
Yes, she's in love with him immediately.
From, like, sight unseen, just immediately, like, oh, I am DTF, this random boy. Right away. To the point where he's like, no means no. But, yeah, that was a weird... I think it's insane that this is such an iconic movie and so of the 80s and, like, oh, it's this fun thing and it's a family film and blah, blah, blah. And I know it's kind of hacky to talk about that element of the movie and be like, whoa, it's about a, you know, the mom wants to fuck the kid.
Yeah.
But it is.
That's like, what it's about, though.
That's what's happening. It is insane to realize that. He cock-blocked his dad. You know what I mean? Like, that's that's weird. That is a weird thing. And I think if the movie came out today, obviously, it would never fly.
No.
Everybody would be like, hey, this took a turn.
This is a kid's movie?
Yeah. Shield your eyes, please.
One thing that I thought was very cool was I loved how in the beginning of the film, they did similar to like Pee-wee's Big Adventure where there's like the machine opening the can or whatever it was. But like that whole sequence of I love when a big machine that takes 2 minutes to do something opens a can of dog food.
Rube Goldberg.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. That movie is so tightly scripted for all the elements that are there that are crazy, mm-hmm. right? And saying we're going to make this movie about a kid who travels back in time to his parents going to school. That's a tough ask, right? For a mainstream movie that's going to be like a family adventure film, mm-hmm. right? For all of that, it is so tightly scripted. Like, everything pays off. Every single fucking thing pays off. Every element gets introduced the right way. The characters are introduced the right way. It's crazy how tight that script is. And you mentioned you bringing up that opening sequence.
Mm-hmm.
There are so many elements in that opening sequence. No dialogue, nothing. Just a camera roving around Doc Brown's garage is telling you a bunch of stuff that you need to know.
Yes.
And that's nuts. Yep. That's nuts.
It's like
opening credit scene is just, it gives you everything. All the clocks, obviously, this is a time travel thing. You know that going in. The dog food, you know, sets up. He's got Einstein,
mm-hmm.
the dog. Everything's going to happen. Marty shows up. You don't see his face for a good long while. His backpack is attached to his skateboard. It goes rolling across the ground, hits the container of plutonium.
Yes.
That's hiding under the bed. But it also sets up a couple of other things, too. I think the camera is, you can see the video camera that he ends up using.
I think maybe,
that becomes important. Marty already has his headphones on and his Walkman. That is an important element later on.
Yep.
That he needs to use. Like, all of these things come into play. You introduce Marty's whole, like, identity in that moment. He's got the sunglasses on. He takes them off, right? And he just wants to play guitar. That sets up his whole thing. But he cranks it all the way up. Like, that's who he is. You know mm-hmm. what I mean? Like, everything is there. All the beats of the movie are there. And that's crazy.
Yes. And to kind of punctuate that whole scene at the end, like you said, he cranks up the dial and he stands in front of what is effectively a bank vault-sized speaker amplifier. And hits that chord, and then classic 80s style gets blasted across the room by the sound wave of him playing the guitar. I loved it. I had forgotten all about it. But that's just like classic 80s, like, turn it up.
Yep.
And then he's smashed across the room.
There's so many elements of that movie that I really, really appreciate. And I think it is nuts how tight it is. I think it's one of the best scripts of all of those 80s, all of those movies that we collectively look at as like, oh, those are the 80s movies. You know what I mean? Because it has so many tough loads to carry with this science fiction element. And, you know, that movie got kids to understand the mechanism that they need to work with to time travel.
Right.
Right? Like, even them fucking up the phrase 1.21 in the movie, it's gigawatts.
Right.
It's supposed to be gigawatts. But, like, we understand why that needs to happen. We understand what it's doing. That's crazy. That's crazy. To this day, in 2019, you know, any time travel movies that come out, there always has to be a moment where in exposition when they're talking, where they kind of just shrug and go, like, it's a thing. You know what I mean?
Yes.
It's science magic. Don't look too close.
Right.
You know, and I think the balance is really cool in Back to the Future, because there's another version of Back to the Future that could exist where, you know, you have to see the fucking, like, wormhole open up and the car's driving through and Marty McFly is like, whoa, and looking all around. And,
right.
You know, and then, somebody falls out of the car during in the slipstream, and it's like, oh, no, he's in the time stream and everything's getting messed up. You know, all that stuff could happen. They kept things really grounded, really simple, and I love it. I absolutely love it, as evidenced by the fact that I'm just ranting about this fucking movie.
I also loved the Forrest Gump-type moment when Marty McFly just starts playing Johnny B. Good.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Well, two things. I love that he was playing Johnny B. Good, and then the guy in the band holds up the phone like Cousin Chuck or whoever it was.
Marvin Berry was the lead singer. And then he goes, gets on the phone, and he's like, Chuck, it's your cousin, Marvin Berry.
Yeah.
You know that new sound you've been looking for? Listen to this. Yeah, which is great because it's like, I mean, the thing that's been commented on a lot is just like, oh, look, a young white boy gave black culture rock and roll. Isn't that nice? But yeah, that's, yeah.
I love that, and I love the Libyans.
Yeah.
I love that Christopher Lloyd was just like, well, the Libyans wanted me to build a bomb, but I fucked them, and I built a time machine instead.
Yeah.
And then he's surprised when they show up.
Yeah.
In Scooby-Doo's
van.
They
found me. I don't know how they found me, but they found me, yeah.
Yeah.
But if you think about it, if you're Doc Brown, if you're building a time machine and you believe that you are going to do it, and he did, he built the time machine for the sake of a few minutes. He was going to be fine, because once he got in that time machine, he was going to be okay.
That's true.
Fuck the Libyans.
That's true.
You know, he was going to be way before the Libyans. He could go back in time. Well, no, because then travel is an issue in the movie. I like that it grounds it where you can't just pick a place. It's just, it's here. It's right here. Hill Valley. They never leave Hill Valley. It's only there.
Mm-hmm.
That's cool. I like that.
Do you have anything else you want to say about the film?
Oh, man.
Or talk about?
I mean, this is tricky because I think this was a good topic to talk about for a lot of reasons, but a tough one because I can't stop and I can talk about all of them. So I guess, is this a three-part episode, right? We're just going to do this. But we'll both cancel our gigs tonight.
Yeah.
We'll just stay here. If anybody has anything to say, then we, you know, we'll knock them out. Like that's Biff Tannen.
Yeah, exactly.
I guess, like, are there any... I almost said, are there any questions you have about the movies? Like, I know, like, I made it. You know what I mean? I'm Bob Gale. I wrote this movie.
Yeah.
The Bobs are great. Robert Zemeckis and Bob Gale. I adore them. Please. I'll say this. If there's any other trivia, I wish I don't want to just spout shit.
That's, sure.
That sounds boring. But originally the ending was supposed to be a nuclear test site.
Interesting.
And that's how they were going to get the power. So they had to drive over to the nuclear test site and do it there. And there's a nod to that in the latest Indiana Jones movie, the terrible one. The one
Crystal
that was
Skull?
Sad and gross. Yeah, that one.
Okay, yeah.
The one where I was working at a movie theater as a projectionist at the time. And I was in charge of all the midnight screenings because mm-hmm. I did marketing for them too. I watched grown men walk into that movie theater wearing Indiana Jones outfits with the hats and the whips. I watched them walk into that movie theater, sit down, and so delighted, and they were going to watch this movie. I watched it with them, and I was like, this not good. This bad. And but I've never seen such a sad sight as the credits rolling, the lights come on, and these grown fucking men in khaki and leather jackets and hats walking out sad, knowing it's not good.
Right.
And like shamefully taking the hats off. I will never forget just a couple of these guys. Like, because this was Bangor, Maine. There weren't a ton of people dressed up as Indiana Jones, but they were pumped.
Yes.
And there was like three or four that were full on Indiana Jones, and I remember them distinctly taking the hats off as they walked out. But I remember that. But in that movie, Spielberg, who produced Back to the Future with Gale and Zemeckis, he didn't direct it. A lot of people think he directed it. He didn't. It was Zemeckis, thank God. He included a scene in this movie, in Crystal Skull, where Indiana Jones hides in the refrigerator to avoid getting killed by a nuclear blast.
Oh.
So that's a nod to like the details in the back there.
Interesting.
So, the last thing I will say is if this somehow gets to anyone in the industry that is even remotely humoring the idea of remaking, doing a reboot or a soft reboot or a, you know, decades later sequel to Back to the Future, please don't do that. Please don't do that. Leave it alone. Leave Back to the Future alone. I know they'll never do it with Zemeckis and Gale alive. And I know they'll never do it with Michael J. Fox alive. I think once they go, it's fair game. I think that's what they think. I think that's what the industry is thinking. I really do feel like the industry is just looking at their watch going, how long?
Any minute
how
now.
Long? Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. And that's going to suck. That's really going to suck. That's going to hurt. Because so much, it wouldn't make sense. You know what I mean? Leave it alone.
I think you're right. Someone is eventually going to go, you know what? But I bet we can put 1 million orange vests on kids.
By Christmas season.
Exactly.
You know? Yeah.
You know?
Oh, that's going to happen. I mean, merchandising alone would go through the roof. Merchandising for Back to the Future now goes through the roof.
Right.
It's going to happen. Whatever. There are things that I like that get reintroduced. I mean, it happens all the time. Star Wars, that's happening with Star Wars. I think parts of the Star Wars thing are great. Parts of it aren't so great, you know? Miles Morales, kind of refreshing part of the Spider-Man thing for younger kids. Mm-hmm. My son is like loves Miles Morales.
Yeah.
That's important to me because I like Spider-Man and I want him to enjoy it. That's awesome. Mm-hmm. That's a good thing. Back to the Future, like, nah, that's an insular thing. It's not like a comic book or a, you know, universe of things happening. Just leave it alone. It's an icon. Let it be an icon.
Yep.
I just don't want to see that happen. I don't want to see 2031's Zac Efron stepping in, you know, whoever is the Zac Efron of 2030.
Sure.
I don't want them to be the new
Michael J. Fox.
Yeah, Marty McFly. Just leave it alone. I feel like an old curmudgeon, but don't touch it.
I understand it's sacred.
Yeah,
yeah,
it's fucking sacred.
Ray, before we get out of here, where can people find you?
I am on the web. I am on the World Wide Web at a website.
Geocities.com /
angelfire.webzine. RayHarringtonComedy.com. That has my show dates and information, stuff like that, links to all the other projects. If you go there, you can get to BeAManTheFilm.com, see some fun stuff there. And then, you know, whatever social media flavor you have, I'm sure I might be there begrudgingly, and we can engage and tell each other what we feel.
Yeah, absolutely. As a matter of fact, Ray encourages direct messages.
Yeah. Yes. Yes. Pictures. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. I like a good pic in a direct message. It can be sexual, non-sexual, whatever.
Sure.
Always aggressive. I need it to always be aggressive.
Always be aggressive. And big fan of free pie at shows.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
Yeah, yeah. I thought that was like what? That was the
thing. Usually a Thanksgiving thing, but why not make it an all-year thing?
Well, then I feel like I would be tipping towards a staring in the mirror going, you got to get your shit together, man. You know, this fun thing during pie season is all well and good.
Pie, you've got a whole season.
Did you just laugh like that's crazy? Did you just laugh like that's a weird thing to say? There's a pie season. Fall is pie season.
Fall, and then in the off season.
Late fall is pie season.
Okay.
It is. It's fucking pie season. What's the most common pie? The number one pie?
Apple.
Yeah.
Or
when
pizza.
When do apples happen?
Fall.
Fall.
I'll give you that.
What's like the second most common? Pumpkin, motherfucker. When does that happen? We had such a fun time
until
the very end, and you questioned my pie season
chart. I love it.
I have a chart. No, I'm just Oh, that first crisp morning. I go out on the porch, and I see the frost on the I just turned into John F. Kennedy. I went to do an old-timey farmer, and it turned into John F. Kennedy at the end there.
Well,
I don't know why that happened.
Ask not what your pie can do for you,
but what you can do for your pie. That's a good question.
Ray Harrington, thank you so much for being here.
Spectacular Show is brought to you by...
You gotta go someplace, but you're sick of planes, bikes, cars, and walking around like a tool? Then come on down to Floyd's Flying Carpets, and you'll find a whole new world of transportation. We've got fluttering tapestries, speedy shag carpets, wave and welcome mats, and stunning steel wool carpet for going off-road. We've even got swooping toupees for the bald gentleman on the go. We're stocked wall to wall. And at these prices, these rugs will be flying off the shelves. Why waste gas money when you can soar through the skies in style with a flying Persian rug? At just $199. Don't want to break the bank? Well, ditch that motor scooter and elevate your game with an economic and durable winged welcome mat starting at just $29.99. Beat that school traffic. Get the family-sized nylon roll, and the kids will be so comfy, they'll forget where they're going.
Are we there yet?
Gas is expensive, walking is dumb, and bikes are for wimps. So come on down to Floyd's Flying Carpets 888-888-8880. Flushing Main Street, Flushing Queens. Take the 7 train here, then fly home and laugh at those schmucks delayed at 74th Street, Broadway. Floyd's flying carpets. Rugs should be in the sky.
See ya.
Tonight, my throwaway guest that no one really cares about is the world's longest tenured temporary worker. He's here for you tonight, and I really hope he didn't have to use any sick time. Jeremy Oceans, everybody!
Actually, I don't get paid sick time. Because I'm a temp.
Well, don't worry. We're paying you for being here tonight, Jeremy. So, how long have you been a temporary worker?
I've been temping for 16 straight years. I've made a career of temping. And I've never been hired.
You've never been hired?
Oh, I see to it that I'm not hired.
Why? Why don't you want a job?
No, I have a job. I'm just terrified of commitment. There are no strings on me. Wild stallion.
Wild stallion. All right. Well, stallion, do you have any secrets?
When I was 22, I slept with my neighbor's wife while he was away on business. He was in Mexico.
No! I mean, temping secrets.
Huh. I misunderstood completely.
You definitely did.
Yes, I do have temp secrets. I once slept with my boss's wife.
Hey! Tips? Tips for holding a temp job is what I mean. Do you have any pointers or tips about keeping a temporary position?
Well, if you sleep with your boss's wife, make sure he doesn't find out. But the secret to being the world's most successful temp worker is faking things well.
Faking things?
Yeah, like, for instance, always make it appear like you're working. You don't want to get caught doing nothing when you're walking around the office. So I bring a prop. Holding a photocopy and having a concerned look on your face will do wonders. You can milk several hours with just a sheet of paper and a slight grimace.
Yeah? Okay.
Another thing is to bring things to the office that you don't need at all, but leave them on your desk. That way, when you sneak out in the middle of the day, people will see your belongings and think, oh, maybe he's in the bathroom. And I am in the bathroom. At the movies. I have to go to matinees on opening day because I hate spoilers.
Yeah, well, sure. I mean, who doesn't hate spoilers?
Also, it helps to be imaginative. If your boss ever says the words, "We have to send you," that means you're going on a trip. So start imagining your excuse right there.
Okay. Well, what's your favorite excuse?
I was in the bathroom. And if you were in the bathroom, that's your business. They don't need to know about your Game Boy.
Okay, Jeremy. Anything else?
It helps to only shower about half the time.
Okay.
It makes you less approachable.
Jeremy Oceans, everybody. We'll take a break. We'll be right back. This week's Spectacular Show cheat code is #SpectacularStrawberry. Please go on Instagram and tag Spectacular Show Pod. That's Spectacular Show P-O-D. And #SpectacularStrawberry. And you could win fantastic Spectacular Show prizes. That is Spectacular Show for today. I'd like to thank my guests, Ray Harrington and Jeremy Oceans. Jeremy, good luck, buddy. I hope they get you some vacation time. Be sure to give us a follow on Instagram at Spectacular Show Pod. That's Spectacular Show P-O-D. Please like, rate, and subscribe, and we'll be back Thursday with more of Ray Harrington. Hades and Mental Hen, Noise and Swirls. We'll see you next time. Bye, 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 bye.
Emotional consideration paid for by number two pencils. We're an oppressive monopoly. And by water, it falls from the sky for free. So go buy some.